Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, why Arizona is a hotbed for lightning. The skies of Arizona have been crackling this week. Along with much-needed rain, the monsoons often bring spectacular shows of lightning sparking from cloud to cloud and downward towards the ground. Southern Arizona is particularly rich with these displays during the summer rains. But why? To start this week's show, we talk with Ron Hawley, a meteorologist and co-author of Flashes of Brilliance, The Science and Wonder of Arizona Lightning. I started our conversation by asking him what it is about a storm that causes electricity to form inside.
All lightning, amazingly enough, has its upper part where the temperature is colder than freezing. Even when it's hot here, the very top of the cloud that produces lightning is colder than freezing, minus 5 to 15 Celsius. So what's needed is a updraft, which is going from near the ground up high, and it's carrying charges from the lower part of the atmosphere to the upper part of the atmosphere, and it becomes unbalanced. There's a lot of disagreement about the details, but what happens is there is small hail, there's ice crystals, and there's supercooled droplets. Those three are necessary in the updraft. From there, it starts.
Somebody listening to this is going to say, wait a minute, freezing temperatures and summer monsoons are two words that often do not go together. So why do our monsoon storms have so much lightning? I'm guessing the temperature on the ground doesn't necessarily have a lot to do with it.
Indirectly, it does, in that the surface temperatures are so high that the updrafts are formed and we have a lot of mountains. And so the mountains are the ones that force the air to go vertically. Air doesn't compress and it doesn't run into the mountains, so it goes up. So those are the ones that really force the most amounts of lightning.
Which I guess is why we don't have a lot of winter lightning, because you don't get that same updraft from the heat.
Right. In the wintertime, you can have it, but it has to be a widespread updraft, which is much slower. It's still colder than freezing up where the lightning is being formed. This lightning is formed between, in Fahrenheit, between about 15 and 5 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's chilly. Boy, we would all like that right now, I think, as we continue our run of 100-plus degree days down.
Yes, for sure.
So before humans became the top cause for wildfires in our area, lightning was what caused most of the fires. Are our storms any more likely to include lightning strikes that reach the ground than storms elsewhere?
I think the figure for the western states in terms of forest fires is that two-thirds or even more of forest fires in the Continental Divide West are due to lightning. And those are natural, and those have always been there.
People in southern Arizona like to say a lot of times that our area is among the most active for lightning. And I know sitting out on my back porch at this time of year, there sure is a lot of it at night coming in. Is that true, or is that just our perception?
All right, you asked one of the great questions. I just co-authored a book on lightning in Arizona. Only lightning and only Arizona, with a recent PhD student from the University of Arizona, Dyla Zhang. And we have a chapter called Arizona is the Lightning Photography Capital of the U.S. It's not the lightning capital of the U.S. That's in Florida. But during the season of July, August, and September in Arizona, we actually have 90% of our lightning in a very short period. And I looked up recently what the number is for the rest of the country. It's 40% during July, August, and September. So we have one of the most concentrated lightning seasons in the country, maybe in the world. So when it's here, we rival Florida. But the season is too short to rival Florida in terms of the whole year.
All right, I have to ask. I admit I'm one of those people who chases lightning around from a distance, generally pretty safely, to take photos like so many of us do. Why are we in southern Arizona the lightning photography capital?
Well, there's a number of factors comes together. First, we have high cloud bases so that the lightning channel is visible from way up high all the way to the ground. In Florida, I worked there for a number of years. there's just a little sliver on the horizon from the cloud base down. So it isn't all that spectacular most of the time. We have remarkable sunsets. We have saguaros. And we have mountains. And so you put all those together and you really have the ingredients. It's one of the great photography, lightning photography places in the world, actually.
I have to ask a lightning question. As someone, I grew up in Florida, so I'm familiar with lightning there, obviously familiar with lightning here. And I've heard two different versions of this. Does lightning go from the cloud to the ground or the ground to the cloud?
Both and neither.
Okay.
All right. The cloud forms up in this cold layer, colder than freezing. The cloud-to-ground lightning we're talking about here. It comes down in steps and reaches down to the ground, and then the light goes up the channel. But this all happens so fast, you can't see it. So people say, oh, I saw it. It's in milliseconds. So there's a very faint channel that comes downward from the cloud, from the lightning production charge region down to the ground. And then when it contacts the ground, then the light goes roaring back up that channel.
When it comes to lightning in our area that we get through the monsoon, is it particularly unique? Do we get more of that in-cloud lightning, what my dad used to call sheet lightning, or do we get more of the very photogenic and spectacular cloud-to-ground lightning from the monsoon?
I don't think we have any different amounts of cloud lightning. The whole special situation here in Arizona, especially in the southern part, is that we can see so much further, and we have such clear air, and the cloud bases are so high. So we're seeing a whole lot more than I grew up in Indiana. The cloud base is low, and the lightning, you can just see the bottoms of the clouds.
Whenever we talk about weather, people always talk about climate change and things like that. Does that affect the formation of lightning at all? Do we see more lightning than we used to or not?
We haven't been able to see anything in terms of a trend. I've been looking at the data from the U.S. Lightning Detection Network, the National Lightning Detection Network, for a number of years, and we don't see a trend. What's happened is it seems that most years are more or less the same. And then in 2020, we had a remarkably decreased number of lightning flashes. And then it went back to normal again. So it seems to be normal, except for some dips. And this year looks like we may be going to end up below normal, but I don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 weeks yet. Yeah, trends are really tough. It's so variable from year to year that it's not like temperature where you have a long record. We just have about 10 or 15 years of fairly stable data.
Is there one part of the state that gets more lightning than the other, or is it really just, you know, if you're near the mountains and it's monsoon season, look out?
Yeah, we did an analysis a couple of years ago. We found that there's a spot over the Chiricahuas that is the number one spot for lightning density in the last 10 years. And it's a 21, I think, cloud-to-ground flashes per square mile per year. I mean, a square mile is not that big. 21 is quite a bit. And then there are some places along the Colorado River by Yuma and up in the northwestern part of Arizona that have, in that 10-year period, has zero lightning. So we do have quite a large variation.
I can hear cars starting now for storm chasers and lightning photographers heading out to the Chiricahuas as we speak.
They're already out there, or they will be. I spoke at a meeting a few weeks ago at the Desert Museum, a conference called Monsoon Con. There's 100 people there, and they were most of them lightning photographers and storm chasers from Arizona. Because I had no idea there were that many. And boy, is that a Type A bunch, I'll tell you that. So
I've met a couple of them over the years, and yes, they are a specific bunch of people.
Yeah, I'm not one of those. I enjoy it, but I don't get into the technical part of photography. I enjoy the detection and the data themselves.
That was meteorologist Ron Holley, co-author of the book Flashes of Brilliance, The Science and Wonder of Arizona Lightning. While many southern Arizonans rejoice in watching all the lightning from a monsoon, those storms also can bring some danger. Lightning strikes can spark wildfires, destroy our buildings and infrastructure, or cause injury and death. With that danger in mind, the National Weather Service tracks and forecasts storms that could prove damaging. Ken Drews is the warning coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Tucson. It's an unassuming office on the outside, but is brimming with tools to track lightning strikes.
Yes, the National Weather Service has access to private companies' lightning detection networks, which are ground-based instrumentation. You may see that also on your own lightning app that you have on your phone. But we have access to that data, and what's neat about that is we can overlay that on top of radar data and on top of satellite data, and that helps us to get a total picture of what's going on with thunderstorms. Plus, in areas where maybe there isn't the best radar coverage, where there might be beam blockage by mountains, we can use that lightning to try to help fill in the gaps that are there. So that helps us to monitor the intensity of thunderstorms. And that kind of helps us with the warning process as well.
You mentioned that warning process. One of the tools you all have is a lightning forecaster. Obviously important for warnings, but so much more for events and things like that.
Yes, we have a satellite-based lightning detection and forecast lightning from a satellite lightning mapper. And so we were able to overlay that onto our satellite imagery and radar imagery, and then use that predictive technology to hopefully forecast when lightning may be developing over an area. So there may just be a few showers around at some point, and then when is that going to grow into a thunderstorm? And so yeah, that lightning would be certainly important for large events, whether it's a sporting event or another large gathering. So we would be supporting emergency management and public safety officials with that information. Also be important for airports as well when thunderstorms are going to start.
And something people might not think about, but during the height of the pandemic, that was important when all of the vaccination sites were outside.
Absolutely, when the vaccination centers were conducting the their operations outdoors, whether they were drive-through or walk-up, we were able to support, again, the public safety officials to give them a little bit of lead time on when, there might have been some sprinkles in the area or some light showers, when there was actually going to be a lightning developing, or give them a probability of whether there will be lightning strikes, so they could make decisions on when they needed to maybe shut down operations temporarily to keep everyone safe.
With all these tools, for example, we're in monsoon right now, and if you're on a high spot in town, you can watch those storms build up, usually out towards the east, and work their way in. What is it that sometimes we get a great light show and sometimes we just get a lot of rain, or sometimes we get none at all, but what is it about some of those storms that they give us a great light show and others just give us rain?
Yeah, it kind of depends on some of the atmospheric variables that are in place with the thunderstorms. Sometimes when you have, say, more of a tropical influence, a lot of times when there's a lot more moisture, maybe not as high of thunderstorm tops, sometimes you don't get that as much hail development in the clouds. You needed to have that ice development in the clouds to get that, build up that electric charge that ultimately leads to lightning. So sometimes in those events, you don't get as much lightning when you have that. But usually in Arizona, most of our thunderstorms we get during the monsoon do produce a lot of lightning, very productive lightning producers.
What do you do with, beyond public safety, all of that lightning data? Is there something you all are looking at scientifically, or is it all just public safety predictive?
Well, a lot of it's public safety, but we are doing some research on the relationship between what we're calling lightning jumps or large increases in the number of lightning strikes that may occur in maybe over a 5 to 10 minute period within an individual thunderstorm, and trying to relate that to whether that's kind of a trigger for when storms become severe or start producing more of these damaging winds and hail. There is some relationship there, and we're doing some research on that to develop a better correlation between the two.
So it's not just prediction. There's real science going on here, too.
Absolutely.
When it comes to lightning in Arizona, we all know it during the monsoon. How do we compare to other states in the region, the rest of the country? Florida is always known, especially Central Florida, for its lightning. But how do we compare?
Well, Florida is a great example. They get you know, a ton of lightning strikes throughout the course of the year, whereas in Arizona, we get, you know, a large amount of strikes, but they're really concentrated during 3 months of the monsoon. So on any given day, you can have certainly more, you know, more lightning strikes that occur on a given day because you're kind of condensing all that into a short period of time.
For people who are out watching the lightning, or maybe just driving home trying to get in before the storm really hits, we have those big flashes of lightning up in the clouds versus those very dramatic bolts of lightning. Is it all the same, or maybe just we're looking at it different angles or things like that?
I mean, there are discharges that occur between clouds or inside of the cloud, and some discharges that go above the cloud that you can see from satellite, and then you do have the actual strikes that occur, the cloud to ground. Those are the ones that are going to, you know, affect you or your electronic equipment or whatever, you know, has that's going to get hit or starting a fire and things like that.
Well, thanks for spending some time talking lightning with us.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
That was Ken Drews, the Warning Coordination Meteorologist with the National Weather Service Office in Tucson. Our first two interviews mentioned storm chasing and lightning photography. So what goes into a good picture of lightning? Ray Cleveland is a photographer who was born and raised in Tucson, and lightning photos are among his specialties. I started our conversation by asking him if lightning has always been something that caught his photographic eye.
Oh, yeah. I've heard plenty of childhood memories of just sitting and watching thunderstorms. And it took me several years. I was born in the early 80s, although I have met chasers who have gotten lightning shots in the 70s and so on. But I didn't realize that it was possible to really capture photos of lightning and the storms until the 2000s even. And I believe 2006 was the very first lightning bolt I captured. It was on the 4th of July, which is usually when all of the monsoon storms start here, with the exception of this year. It is a handheld shot with my point-and-shoot camera. And I got some fireworks and lightning in the same shot.
So not on purpose, I'm guessing. It was just
It was a complete luck. It was about a 4-second exposure. I've gone back and looked at the metadata since. But I wasn't able to recreate it until years later. Because I always thought, and a lot of people initially do think, that in order to capture lightning, you need to trigger it right away. But no human being really has that good of reaction time. It's all luck if you try it that way. The true secret behind it is to do a longer exposure.
I was going to ask you about that. As someone who has taken up storm chasing and lightning photography since the start of the pandemic, it was a good way to be outside. And yeah, I learned that real quickly. You'll never get that shot.
It's possible. I've done it before.
Okay, possible, but the chances are, I've gotten a couple. But yeah, you have to do longer exposures.
Mm-hmm.
Is that purely just to increase the luck, or is there a photographic reason also to do those longer exposures?
It increases the chances very dramatically. Basically, the simple science behind it would be that your sensor on the camera is capturing all light that comes into it. And since lightning is typically, especially at night, brighter than everything around it, if you're exposing for like 30 seconds or something, it will show up bright still on that image because it's the most light that's emitted from that area.
And that's why you get the cool tendrils mm-hmm. off the main bolts and all that, I assume, that way.
Yeah, there's a few types of lightning that like strike repeatedly and look kind of like ribbons in the shot. And there's a bunch of really interesting like subgenres of lightning out there that are really fun to try to catch.
You're a published professional photographer, so we don't want you to give away all the secrets because it is your livelihood. So somebody listening to this says, that's it, I'm going to go do this. without giving it all away, because again, you are a professional, it is your job. What are some things they need to think about when it comes to lightning photography? You just talked about longer exposures, mm-hmm. but can I take any DSLR, or if you still have an SLR that runs film?
Yeah. Just about any DSLR has a port on it where you can use a remote trigger. If you get really into it, you can invest in a lightning sensor trigger. Essentially, there's a sensor out there that detects the infrared that precedes a lightning bolt, and that will trigger your camera to get it. But that's not necessary at nighttime. That's mostly for capturing daytime bolts. At nighttime, you can get a really simple, cheap shutter remote or shutter release cable that has a locking mechanism, and just have it locked. Or you can have your camera on bulb mode, which keeps the shutter open as long as you have it triggered or locked. But essentially, I like putting manual mode to like 15, 10, 30 seconds, or however long you want to capture all the light in your scene. When it's really dark, you wind up getting with longer and longer exposures. And the other settings seems a little bit counterintuitive, because lightning is so bright, you want to stop it down a little bit with the f-stop. I probably stick around f8 or so, which is very counterintuitive at nighttime. But when you get a really bright lightning bolt, it will blow out the sensor and look super, super bright on your shot. And so I tend to try to stop it down to prevent that.
When it comes to, you've decided to go chase a storm for an afternoon, an evening, whatever it is, how much planning goes into that? Or do you just look at the radar and say, all right, we're heading that way? Or do you take time and pre-scout, like, oh, it'd be really great if I could get lightning behind this particular saguaro or this building or something like that?
It is a mix of both. I have a custom map on Google Maps that I try to keep and add more locations to. On a day-to-day basis, the storms travel in different directions. They go to different locations around the city and outside the city. And it's helpful to do some scouting, maybe even not during monsoon season, and mark your map with, oh, I would love to capture some lightning at this spot or a storm from here, and find overlooks around town. And there's a whole community of storm chasers around here that are very generous to share some spots too. And I've, especially this year, I think this is the year that I've bumped into the most other storm chasers that I have. I've gone out on my own a lot this year, and I still wind up chasing storms with a whole bunch of other people, even on my own. And parking garages are kind of popular, although there are some with security that will kick you out, I'm sure. When this whole town is covered with rain, you can't really find too much of a safe location. A parking garage is a good spot.
You bring up an important point, safety. Mm-hmm. If you're standing on top of a parking garage and you're of average height, you may be the highest point.
Yeah, I would go a level below.
Well, and how do you balance safety? Or we were talking before we started recording, Sonoyta and down in mm-hmm. Cochise County is beautiful for landscapes and things mm-hmm. like that. But you're standing out in the middle of the grass prairie. How do you deal with the safety factor so that you come back?
There is definitely a lot of risk involved. The safest place usually is in your car for this. There still is, like, when you're setting up your camera outside the car, there is that risk that it's basically a lightning rod. There has been a few days where I've been terrified to pick up my camera because the lightning is coming and we got to move locations. But probably the best bet is to try to look at the radar and see where the storms are moving. It's not 100% guarantee. I went to the monsoon convention this year, and there was a speaker there that had a lot of great information about lightning safety. And it's a very short list of what's safe. Like, inside your home and inside your car, for the most part, you're safe. I've bumped into other storm chasers whose car had gotten struck by lightning even, but they were still around to tell
the tale. That sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
For the person listening to this who has spent this whole season, if they're new to town, or maybe their entire life or somewhere in between, watching the great light show of the monsoon, says, that's it, I'm going to try it. Do they need to go out and get the highest end camera to do this?
It's not necessary. You could use cheaper consumer cameras for that. Any camera that you could do a longer exposure with would help. I believe there's a lot of point and shoots out there that would be capable of this. If you use a tripod and shutter release or just press the button and for a long exposure, you might be able to capture some lightning that way.
How about the camera that lives in everybody's pocket now?
With your cell phone?
With your cell phone.
Okay, there's some apps to help with that. On Android, there's an app called, I think it's just called Lightning or Lightning Camera, where what it does is it basically shoots video and you point it at the storm, and when lightning strikes, you press the button, the capture button, and it'll show you a buffer of all the images that it has captured in the last few seconds. And you could choose the ones that the lightning struck through.
Like live photos on iPhones, yeah. Same idea.
Yeah, it looks pretty neat sometimes. Most of the time you get rolling shutter, where it's basically you see the lightning start and then there's a big line and then no lightning below it type. It's interesting images, but DSLRs seem to capture it a bit better, of course.
You also do night photography, Milky Way. This is a great time of year for it in southern Arizona, except for the lightning, which messes it up. But you said you were down in Sonoyta recently and got lucky and got a little 2-for-1.
Yeah, we were chasing a storm off in the distance and it died out mostly and the clouds parted a little bit and we were treated to be able to see the Milky Way in the same night. So I got photos of storms and then a few hours later, we were able to capture the Milky Way.
A bonus that we don't get a lot at this time of year.
Last year, I finally got a bit of a trifecta shot with, it's not my favorite photo, but I still kind of count it as capturing it, as I got the Milky Way with some distant lightning coming from a storm in the distance. And there was also a meteor in the shot as well. And it's, I wish it was a prettier photo, but it's still really exciting to capture that.
That was photographer Ray Cleveland. Visit our website for links to some of his lightning photos. And that's the buzz for this week. You can find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Zach Ziegler is our producer with production help from Desiree Tucker. Our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
Arizona Public Media's original programming is made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.